At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be going through Woke Wars 2. This is another stream on this topic. A lot of stuff has happened in the last 2 weeks since the last time we did a stream on this topic. And so we're going to dive right in. Actually, it's been 3 weeks because we had Thanksgiving last week. So 2 live streams ago, we did this. And a lot of stuff has happened since. We're going to talk about the final part of the Tobias Reimann-Schneider saga. We're going to talk about the Antioch Declaration, and I got a hot take on that. And I also got a hot take on the James Lindsay American Reformer story. So we got 3 big topics that we're going to cover tonight, and I think we're going to cover some more topics probably that are all related to this. Anthony's written an article on the James Lindsay and the American Reformer story, so we're going to dive into that. Otherwise, how are you today?
All is well.
So, and as Truddle says, stay frosty. Remember, it's the same war. And that is absolutely one of the points that I think is worth conveying, because Woke Wars 2 is our colloquial name for it. But in many ways, it is the same war as Woke Wars 1. We're still dealing with liberalism in the church. And I think a lot of the people we're going to be talking about tonight are not necessarily liberals, but they're certainly moderates in this regard. There might be an old mentality, this internalized liberalism of sorts, that has inhibited critical thinking. Other people, I do want to say, are sellouts. There are some people that I think are going to come up tonight that are absolute sellouts. I'll try to like point them out as we go through them. Like, I don't think Doug Wilson's a sellout, for instance. I do want to start by saying that I do have disagreements with Doug Wilson and James White. I don't think James White is a sellout either. I think he's just sincerely wrong and doesn't like to admit when he's wrong, but I don't think he's a sellout. And, you know, AD Robles had a good video on advice and going through the game tape, because another thing to talk about tonight is the end of No Quarter November. We could do talk a little bit about that, because a lot of these events have to do with Doug Wilson trying to burn bridges, which was a bit of a sketch that he did about burning bridges. And, you know, AD Robles had good advice about not burning bridges, and I want to follow that advice because I thought it was very full of wisdom. He was being a very reasonable Latino, and
yeah, I'm, you know, I'm not as reasonable. I respect his diplomatic efforts, because him and John Harris have been extending olive branches. So I do got a lot of respect for that. But, and again, between two competing factions or camps or whatever you want to call it, it's good to have those guys that will be the olive branch extenders. I'm more of a, maybe not burn the bridge, but I am more of an embargo kind of guy.
Well, neither of the two can cross. But, you know, this, we operate in discernment, news gathering. We're not going to make a whole lot of friends with people in big or medieval. They already don't like us, because, you know, you criticize John MacArthur once, some people won't like you for that. You know, you disagree with James White once, and you're not a Muslim, a Jew, or a Mormon, and, you know, it'll never be the end of that. So some people don't know how to handle criticism or disagreement, and some people just want to use you because you're in the media, so that you're just something to be used by. J.D. Hall wrote a pretty good piece about this. I don't know if you've read his Polemicist Manifesto, but he talked about being used by people in higher up, like people in Big Eva would use him to go after their opponents. And he wrote about how, in retrospect, that was a big waste of time. So there's wisdom from other people that I want to take. And part of that is not trying to burn bridges, even though, you know, there are some bridges that I'm trying to, that I don't really care about because, you know, some people aren't talented. And then there's other people that I, you know, think that we can maybe pressure to being more orthodox on this subject. And I think one of those people is Clear Truth Media. I think maybe we can apply enough pressure that they become based, because I think that is definitely an organization that's going to go where the wind blows on woke wars too. Clear Truth Media is a media startup. Basically, they're trying to set out to be the Gospel Coalition, but there's been some mixed results on that ambition. I talked in my article last Saturday about how they promoted the Bonhoeffer movie, even though Bonhoeffer was way too liberal for even the Gospel Coalition. So, doctrinally speaking, so they're hailing someone as a martyr who has no business being called a martyr. And if you're going to be the replacement to the Gospel Coalition, if that's how you fancy yourself and you're already not practicing discernment retroactively, there's going to be some major problems. So I think that organization is a pretty good indicator of who's going to win the war, because they got people on both sides contributing to the organization itself. So so Woke Wars 2 is in many cases just like Woke Wars 1. In Woke Wars 1, a lot of people went woke for black people. In Woke Wars 2, you're just replacing black with Jew, and you got a lot of the same premises. So in one case, I think, you know, people want to be cool because black culture is cool culture in the United States. It certainly has been all our lives. And in the next case, people want to keep their positions in media, because even in Christian media, Jews pretty much dominate Christian media. Prove me wrong. So
especially when you consider like crossover appeals to like Con Inc. establishments like Daily Wire and even Blaze Media.
Which I do think if you were to accuse Doug Wilson of selling out, that would be your tangible evidence. I don't think Doug Wilson is a sellout. I just think he's sincerely wrong about some things, because again, Doug Wilson is more moderate than people think. You know, like his theology isn't that based. He did endorse Sam Alberry's book back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, he is a theological pioneer, and that is to a fault. And like one of the things I brought up in my latest Doug Wilson article, it's just like, yeah, I'm going to go a lot harsher on Doug Wilson, especially if I'm writing two articles about him in a week, it seemed like, or two back to back. So yeah, I'm going to be very harsh on him. And it is kind of like, okay, well, if you want to like, you know, really go after the whole Nabal Abigail thing, I mean, I could go for the jugular, because like Doug Wilson is literally the guy that, you know, 10 years ago, if you told your, you know, if your wife didn't like the fact that you were listening to Doug Wilson, she could report that to the church elders. And then the elders would go after the husband for reading Doug Wilson, and they would use the Abigail Nabal trick on that. Like that's the exact scenario Doug created. And he is the scenario 10 years ago.
He was a testing ground for this.
Yes.
And, you know, people like Mark Driscoll and John Piper did defend Doug Wilson to their credit. Now, again, I'm not a fan of John Piper, but no one's going to get in trouble for listening to John Piper. People might get in trouble for listening to Mark Driscoll, because, again, I think he's actually someone who's gotten better over the last 10 years, not worse. Granted, that comes with some theological changes. He's a lot more charismatic than he used to be, but I think he's actually better than he was 10 years ago. I think that's, and, you know, he's not necessarily, he's not woke, but he's certainly very much in favor of Zionism and stuff like that. But I don't think that's a shift in theology at all. I just think, you know, he's someone that spiritualizes things and has the wrong premise regarding modern Israel and runs with it. Because, like a lot of people do. So there's a lot of people who are sincerely wrong on this issue. There are some people that are sellouts. I would say that the people at the Babylon Bee are sellouts. So the Seth Dillon and Joel Berry, I think that they're sellouts. Like they're not really, you know, they want to be liked by Elon Musk and by other people. And they never make fun of Jews, ever. Like, not in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like 2024 hasn't been a year of material, and you know, there's literally a tunnel incident in New York City, and I don't recall the Babylon Bee making any headlines about that. And that was like the that's like a gold mine of content.
I mean, you know, president of Mexico, prime minister of England, a lot of content that they could run with. Bibi Netanyahu and Trump beef, so much content to make fun of. But they don't. And I think that means something. So anyway, let's go through the topics, because that'll give us some opportunities to make some points. But first, I want to say, hey, if you like this kind of content, do subscribe to the channel, to the podcast. If you are new, the best way to help a YouTube channel is new subscriptions. I was watching a video earlier, someone that I'm subscribed to complaining about how the algorithm's killing their channel. And it's like, I don't think it's the algorithm, but because they don't understand, it's not impressions and views, it's new subscriptions that fuels views on a video. I don't know how a larger channel doesn't understand that. So anyway, there's your reason to subscribe if you haven't already. We also have a Patreon-like system. I've been putting out some more content behind the paywall. I got a juicy article on Daily Wire that's going to be behind the paywall. That's going to come out this weekend. So there's a reason to subscribe to the Patreon-like system. And a new initiative that I'm doing. Everyone at the activist level, which is the lowest tier, will get a free copy of an ebook of Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare, which is in the background of the stream. But I do have a physical copy on me. So you can get a free ebook copy. Please use the email address in your account that will be associated with where I send the ebook to, or specify otherwise if you sign up. I have yet to announce this, so this is my announcement of that. I'm going to be doing that for the next month. So I believe, you know, early January, I'm going to cut that to a halt after we do the year-end live stream, which I think is going to be on January 2nd or 3rd, whenever the Thursday is.
Oh, wow. Doing so, the year-end after year-end? The second is the Thursday. I should know that because I think
it's better than doing it on the 26th after Christmas. So that's my thought. So there's your promo. So let's dive in. Let's start with the Tobias Reimann-Schneider saga, which after the last video that we did on that, he did a response video on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, which I was very cynical about. This is someone that's trying to enter into the American evangelical marketplace. I think he's pretty well aware of the holidays that we have here, and especially if you're trying to break into media. You know, your understanding of news cycles and stuff like that.
If you want to, you don't do that on a Friday. You don't do that.
You don't do the Friday news dump. Yeah. Wednesday before Thanksgiving is a drinking holiday in the United States. That's not the time to be dropping breaking news updates. I thought it was odd that the David Platt documentary, they dropped their first trailer on Christmas Eve. Like, why? Why is that the time that you're going to be doing that? So that was a weird decision, but
there's a reason Hunter Biden.
Actually, that one makes more sense because of Christmas Eve services. So they're trying to get ahead of people looking into David Platt and attending his church. Maybe that one makes more sense, but the Wednesday before Thanksgiving does not make sense. If you wanted to set the news cycle, you do it on a Monday, a Tuesday, or a Thursday that's not Thanksgiving. So you do it on a weekday. Earlier in the week probably is better. So I was cynical about that. I did watch it. His complaints mostly stemmed around, he had a complaint about one-party consent recording. So in the United States, I don't believe it's every state, but I know Texas for a fact is a one-party consent state where only one party has to consent to recording a conversation for it to be legal. By the way, no party consent, I don't believe, is legal. So you can't just record someone else's private conversation that you're not a part of. But so that's what the consent part means. Tobias Reimann-Schneider was very uppity about two-party consent because, again, this is not someone who believes in free speech. He's very European in that regard. So he didn't believe in free speech, and he attributes it to be sin in order to record someone in a one-party consent fashion. He believes and alleges that Joel Webbin entrapped him to say something that he otherwise wouldn't have said.
Yeah, which, like his grandmother liking Hitler.
Yeah, I guess he wouldn't have said that if he was, you know, if he was if he knew he was being recorded, he wouldn't have said his grandmother was a Hitler enthusiast, you know? So,
or that he would burn synagogues
he didn't say burn. He would never burn.
He wouldn't burn them. He would, I guess, decommission synagogues.
It was insane because, first of all, you know, if you're not happy with what you said being public, why say it at all, especially in front of other people in a more hostile environment or contentious, let's say contentious. So if you're in a more contentious statement, you know, you should just be fine saying to the other side what you're willing to say in public. So a lot of stuff was going on there. Joel Webbin has maintained that he did not secretly record or know that he was recording. It was the church member that did it. And most of the struggle session was about Joel Webbin. Or maybe not most, but it's very close. How much of the struggle session was about Joel and how much of the struggle session was about the church member. It is very close. So to me, at the end of the day, the Tobias Reimann-Schneider scandal ends with him doing just enough to save face because he knew that the people that by dropping it on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, not enough people would actually watch it and realize how no substance was to be found in his video. But it would be long enough as a deterrent, so no one's going to watch it out of length. I mean, people did watch it, but you know what I'm saying. And then enough people would astroturf him. So people like Doug Wilson, the Moscow Mooters, James White, Joe Boot, they would astroturf Tobias enough for him to save face, and also by extension for them to save face. So that's my hot take on that. It's a little bit old, but your thoughts on that? Because I have not, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, that's Tobias thing. Yeah, I mean, if you were trying to like bury it behind like media, like if you're trying to time it perfectly to absolve yourself or like kind of like get away with it and basically just, you know, get it all out there. I mean, yeah, that's how you would do it. Just you plan it, you dump it on the worst day possible. You let your allies basically take up the fight for you. I think he even has like a Twitter account or like an anon.
He finally made a Twitter account and he made a YouTube channel. Again, this is someone who has ambitions in it of getting into the American evangelical media landscape. And he didn't have these basic things done. Like he could have made a Twitter account the entire day. We were roasting him for weeks about his laptop not being charged yet. And then lo and behold, he has a pretty nice studio set up. It's pretty nice, not gonna lie. So he needed all this production in order to respond. Maybe that was the delay. Like he needs to polish his response or his production value on what should be an apology. So those are just my thoughts on the matter. I think that was just enough to save face, but he's not going to have lasting relevancy in evangelicalism unless they really try to astroturf him. But they could be a lot more successful astroturfing some other sycophant. Because I don't think Doug Wilson is short on sycophants, because Toby Sumter is definitely one, in my opinion. Dave Shannon's a real one, though. Maybe give him more love. So those are my thoughts. I'm ready to move on to the Antioch Declaration, unless you have something else to add. Actually, maybe catch up on the chat first. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if Formosan Black Party or Black Bear is referring to this. Planned Murderhood got caught, remember. So, they tried to destroy Joel Webbin's ministry, and that's a really important thing to point out. They tried to destroy him and his ministry and it failed.
And keep in mind, this went on for a year, for most of this year.
Yeah, this was a conspiracy. I think it was a conspiracy. Tobias, does admit to being in group chats with these other big names. Like, they were in group chats. He says something along the lines of being encouraged by Doug Wilson. So they are incommunicado. They are talking. So I do think this was a bit of a conspiracy. And I think Joel Webbin does as well. He gave a statement saying that as well.
And it does involve other players, like obviously, like
Joe Boone and James White.
Well, Contramundum being other people on the blacklist that.
Yes, Stephen Wolf and Eric Kahn and Brian Sabe. So the Ogden crowd, the Contramundum crowd, Stephen Wolf. They also tried to cancel Stephen. Owen Strand tried to cancel Stephen Wolf from Canon Press. That hasn't worked out yet. I wrote about that earlier this week. So let's dive into the Antioch Declaration. So I have a bit of a hot take on this. I've already talked about the merits or lack thereof of the Antioch Declaration. And this was the big crowning achievement of No Quarter November in 2023 or 2024. It was a crowning achievement of No Quarter November, this Antioch Declaration. And this Antioch Declaration is an absolute failure. And it was an embarrassment that James White, Doug Wilson, Joe Boot et al. Put this out. And they absolutely failed. They even did it for political purposes. I'm summarizing the two videos that I've done on this so far before I make my more grand point. They basically wanted to debunk or denounce people for noticing. They wanted to give Talmudic Judaism, religion, you know, modern day Jews, a preferred status among, you know, the false religions out there, which is what they do by saying you can't say that one religion is worse than another religion. You can't say that Judaism is worse than another religion, which logically means that every other false religion is either worse than them or is equal to them, which is not a biblically defensible statement. So there's a lot of issues going on with what they were arguing. They went after Aristotle for some reason. And they don't do good exegesis.
Not just Aristotle's ideas, they went after Aristotle's person, which no one appeals to Aristotle as a person. Aristotle is only his ideas at this point. Like, most people have pretty much zero insight as to who he was as a person, other than some guy in Athens, over 2,000 years ago at this point. No, but they went after him as a person, not just his ideas.
Yeah, right. So I want to talk about the Antioch part, because they completely do bad exegesis on Antioch. And this is a story about them, about a group of Judaizers introducing law to the gospel. They were adding law to the gospel, and that is a no-no, obviously. What the Antioch Declaration does is make it about race. It was not technically wholly about race, because Hellenistic Jews were uncircumcised. That's what made them Hellenistic, by the way. Not that they spoke Greek, because Jesus spoke Greek. It was that they were uncircumcised, because the Greeks would never circumcise themselves. That's unheard of for the Greeks, who, you know, believed in human bodily perfection. Like, they valued that. It's very evident in their statues that they valued the ideal human form. So they wouldn't believe in things like circumcision. So the Hellenistic Greeks would not do that. And so they were also victims of the Judaizing heresy. So they misread that and interject a woke read of that on the basis of race. And we have seen so many times that people use the division in the Galatian heresy to make a woke argument, when it's really about adding law to the gospel. And they get that wrong. So the other thing that's worth bringing up is that the Antioch Declaration got spammed, and it was beautiful. Signatures?
We got Steve Lawson on this stream, right?
Okay, I'm going to make a confession. The Steve Lawson one was me. Not, I did not think it would make it through. I put in way more plausible ones that did not make it through. I put in Orenthal Simpson. That didn't make it through. O'Shea Jackson. That didn't make it through. But all of a sudden I do Steve Lawson, which is so on the nose, and that slips by the goalie. I think that's the racism here.
I mean, like Waymar got through too.
I know.
I mean, if
I go through the fakes, you can go through some of them. But if I start doing that, I'm going to lose composure because I'm laughing so hard.
Yeah, my favorite's a great joke about that. I guess at India's expense, because it's like, yeah.
Man, you're trying to get this channel canceled.
Yeah. But yeah, that one was my favorite because it's like,
you know how many Chuck Schumer
actually got through.
Do you know how many Chuck Schumers from New York made the list? Like, the guy's a senator, and that made it through. But I do O'Shea Jackson from not Compton, but Riverside, and that doesn't get by. Like, who makes the rules here? I've submitted a lot over the last few days. They've not updated it since the last time they updated it, which I believe is about a week ago. C.I. Schofield made it through. So many people made it through, and someone spammed my name on there, and Pete Quiñones and Matthew Pearson.
Yeah.
We're all getting spammed here.
Peter Quiñones. Yep. Classic.
So, and then someone gets through Toledo Gates. How does this work? Asher Schekelberg?
Yeah, how does this work? Ridiculous.
How does that get by, but Orenthal Simpson does not?
Okay, Nazi.
I'm looking forward to the next time they do this, but it does bring me to a tweet that I wanted to share. Because here's my point. The Antioch Declaration has been defeated. And this is a major goal. This is a major battle that needed to be won. This is a tweet from Link, who appears to be a Bitcoin enthusiast at Satoshi Sentinel. Less than 1,000 people signed the Antioch Declaration. Let that sink in. For reference, James White's Dividing Line, Canon Press, and Cross Politics have a combined almost 250,000 followers. And I'm guessing that he cites the YouTube subs for that. And then he says, I'd be willing to wager that Stone Choir probably gained far more than 1,000 followers this month. Pretty fair odds.
I mean,
so yeah. Let's switch the metric from YouTube subscribers to how big are these email lists that they promoted this on, and they couldn't get people to sign up for this statement. You got to add in Joe Boot on top of that with the Ezra Institute. Like, their email list combined, again, they would make us look like Stone Choir by comparison with, you know, their email list to our email list. You should sign up for our email list. You'll get more articles and stuff for free, by the way. Most of the articles are free, and I never do a newsletter that only has paid articles. So you always get something for free. I don't do enough paid articles, by the way, but I'm trying to do more. So less than 1,000 people signed it, and they've not updated the names in a week. So I like what Cameron's saying here. I get more out of the Antioch Declaration by seeing who hasn't signed it. Yeah. Dave Shannon from Cross Politics hasn't signed it to my knowledge. I don't think Joe Rigney signed it to my knowledge. Stormy Squad says my favorite is Karen Longhouse. Again, I could just geek out all stream long if we wanted to go through the names that made it through. I'm a software tester by trade. So this is something of a specialty of mine, is to try to figure out how to break a system. And I use, you know, so that's kind of how my mind thinks when it comes to testing this submission form. What can I get by? And apparently, I did some other names that were, you know, colorful, like Clayton Bigsby and Tyrone Biggums, which are Chappelle Show characters, by the way. I think I did those before the last round that got accepted. I'm like, how did these not make it through? And then sitting senators in the United States make it through. I didn't understand that. And C.I. Schofield, how does that make it through?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So on the nose. But, yeah. This is not gaining traction.
Even if we were to divide, like, you know, that 250 number in half, that's still less than 1% in a month, or maybe two, three weeks. The fastest time of which you would convert people is immediately.
Yeah, they could not convert 1% of their following to sign this statement. Let that sink in. You had the entire correct denomination hierarchy supporting this declaration.
And that's without even getting into how many of those 1,000 are fakes. Hilarious fakes.
ML Nolan says, Chuck Schumer signing it is plausible. Multiple times?
I mean,
there's a Chuck Schumer, a Charles Schumer, like multiple. Oh, yes, this one. Tariq Nasheed, who's like a Twitter grifter. Totally, you know.
Well, that was the one from white people, Wakanda,
Illinois.
Yes. Wakanda, Illinois.
That one made it through a manual review. That one got through manual review.
And for those that don't know, Wakanda, real place, it's in Illinois, spelled differently than what Marvel had.
So a lot of people in Creek pushed this. And again, the conversion rate on signing this was pathetic at the end of the day. They got more people to sign that BioLogo statement, which was disgraceful at the time. They got more people to sign the Nashville statement, which was pretty decent, all things considered. And they got more people to sign the statement on social justice and the gospel. So they got a lot of people to sign statements in the past. I signed the Frankfurt Declaration when that came out in 2022. I would not sign this at all. All right, I'll read the super chat because, you know, you sent it in. Thank you, Nobody Special, for saying, Doug looks like a guy who gets to Old Country Buffet 20 minutes before they open. And I do think that there is something to this. And I think that undermines Doug Wilson to some degree. Because there was some talk about, you know, obesity in the pastors and stuff like that. Like, and I know someone appealed to Charles Spurgeon, that, you know, Charles Spurgeon was pretty fat, but Charles Spurgeon also died at like age 57. So there, but in his defense, in defense of the boomers, they grew up with all the processed food and none of the knowledge of the processed food. If that makes sense. Yeah, like, I mean, we know now that it's unhealthy for us. They grew up with that buried. They grew up being told the food pyramid was a valid indicator of nutritional value.
Well, and maybe they were eating the same way. And then I think it's like the late 80s, early 90s when, you know, that like that's the whole theory that the nicotine companies or like all the cigarette companies were now getting into the food industry. And then they started making the food, going out of their way to make the foods more addictive and less healthy and more processed. I mean, I think it's like R.J. Reynolds, Nabisco. So Nabisco is Oreos. R.J. Reynolds is cigarettes. So you have a combination of a company that will then make the products more addicting and Oreos being a super stimulus type of product.
I will agree with the chat in saying the Mr. Rogers setup and attire did not look good on him. And I guess I'll leave it at that.
I just think it's a poor gimmick of Like, you did all this lambasting of white boy summer is gay, and here you are mimicking Mr. Rogers with the set and everything. And I didn't even realize, like, it's like you were really playing into that, not just like I didn't realize they began their podcast episodes with the music from Mr. Rogers.
I mean, I've never seen Mr. Rogers, but you know, I hear that, and the painting guy was whose name escapes me, and things like Sesame Street were like the three pillars of like PBS and children's programming back in the day. The guy I'm forgetting, Steve Irwin, obviously needs to be up there. Absolute pillar in the field, but I'm not familiar with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood at all. Maybe I'm too young for that, but it doesn't land with a lot of people. And I think Bob Ross. Thank you, chat. So Bob Ross, the art guy. Yes. So there's a lot of, I think No Quarter November was a failure, and this was the pinnacle of No Quarter November. This was what they were building towards for almost an entire year, if you can believe it, because they had beef with Joel Webbin going back to February or something like that. And in May 2024, I believe, is when Doug Wilson starts parroting the woke right talking point of James Lindsay. So we're going to talk about the James Lindsay thing next. But I think that the Antioch Declaration has been defeated, and this is a win. This is a W. I think they're too demoralized to even do another manual review of all the signatures that I've submitted, because they haven't updated the list.
The more that they tried this route, the worse they look. And this was kind of a resounding defeat for their efforts. And honestly, a very discrediting defeat. And they're almost, you know, not to like speed up with the transition, but they're almost thankful at this point that Lindsay did what he did. Because they, you know, it swung all the pressure away from the Antioch Declaration and Doug Wilson onto, you know, James Lindsay versus American Reformer. So there is a shift that happened because of that. Or, you know, they're able to get a lot of the attention off their back and let James Lindsay and, you know, all the paleocons duke it out. And
let's answer some questions in the chat. I'll answer this one first. Are the signers pastors or just anyone? Just anyone. A lot of pastors signed it. Anyone can sign. There was one female pastor that signed it, but otherwise, you know, men and women signed it. It is a, to me, in some ways, it's a good test of the friend-enemy distinction in a way, but not completely. Like, I don't want to burn more bridges than is necessary. But someone who I would consider a sellout was on the list, and I don't know. But I say that, but they're not going to be mentioned tonight because they're not relevant to anything else. Nobody special with another super chat. Thank you. Who is the true leader of the conservative masculine reform trad movement today? And that, I think, is going to be a problem in answering, because I think things are too segmented for there to be a true leader of any movement anymore. Like 100 years ago, you could have a true leader of a movement. I think even early, and that's what you're going to see. So even with now, everything's so fragmented, everyone can build their own anthill, so to speak. So no one's going to be as large, but there's going to be more of it. I actually do talk about this in one of my chapters about never erecting evangelical popes. I talked about how in spiritual warfare, we're going to end up being more decentralized. And I talked about how that's a good thing. There are some limitations to it, but not having an evangelical pope, I think, is more beneficial than harmful. And it does allow us to tackle multiple issues with speed. And I think that'll be it. So do evangelicals have a Jordan Peterson? No.
I mean, that technically would be.
I don't think he's even.
You think if you want to say he was the Jordan Peterson, so, certainly tries to be.
I don't think we have.
I think Joel Webbin would answer the question.
I think he's emerging as that.
Or at least as the guy with not most market share, but most market share could still be like 12%, and everyone else is like at like 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
So
it's not.
I think there's a sense in which people like Joel Webbin could be the emerging leader because he passed all these people in subs. He's not passed everyone in subs, but all the people that he's opposed to in Woke Wars 2, he's passed them in subs on YouTube. And in a very short period of time. Good for him, by the way. When I interviewed him in 2023, he had 24,000 subs. So he's really come up in the world. And I'm hoping to make it to his conference next year. So, his balkanization continues even in our small circles.
And that's the problem. Like, again, especially with, you know, when you look at like James White, Doug Wilson, and like a lot of their behavior. Like, Reformed has this reputation, and part of it, I would say, is because it's very logic-driven. But when you get logic-driven and you combine that with, like, I guess, dogmatic passion, then you become very prone to, like, purity spiraling and dividing over, like, little things or little differences. I mean, again, the logic thing goes back to the Reformation, where I think, you know, Francis Turretin can be seen saying, yeah, our camp is very logically driven. And, you know, we do rely a lot on reason and logic and ironically the classics that, you know, James White doesn't like. But so that is just a facet of the Reformed camp, is it is very logically driven. And that can lead a lot of bad directions if people don't want to temper reason with, I won't say compassion, but with,
how about natural affections
or prudence?
Okay.
There's being reasonable and then there's also being prudent.
Yes, and, which is a biblical, you know, where the Bible uses the word prudence for wisdom, by the way, and many times. Also discernment. Because most people think, you know, Solomon asked for wisdom. No, he actually asked for discernment. That's what he asked for. And God granted him discernment. And I guess he had discerning taste in women. But with that said, yeah, I think there's a major issue in reform circles is now I do think that some people just want to hate the church. So, you know, oh, we're the worst. And I think that's a negative attitude that's, you know, is unhealthy to have. Like, I don't really accept narratives that, you know, Christians are the bad guys in situations. I think there's times where there was compromise that led to the church doing bad things, like locking down in 2020. Like that was clearly a bad thing, but overall Christians were the good guys in that, like, we were the ones that were the lone bulwark on a lot of things, and taking flack for not getting certain medications and stuff like that, euphemisms. So not a big fan of, you know, blaming the church for things in general, not a big fan of that at all. And with that said, I do think there's some of that. There are some people who just want to divide over nothing, but there's also just debate and people don't know how to act with the debate. Like, they assume that anytime there's a disagreement with someone, there's hate going on.
And this would be Tom Buck today on, oh, maybe not today, yesterday, reacting to Joel Webbin.
Yeah, that,
like,
he had a weird read of that. And I'll
an article on that, but
it didn't happen. I don't think an article is needed on that. Mm-hmm. It seems like the situation reconciled itself. But he was disagreed with, but he wasn't attacked or anything. And some people don't know how to handle disagreement. Some people don't understand what Twitter is. Twitter is for attacking people. If you want friendly social media interaction, go to Gab. I mean, you'll get some trolls, but, you know, I don't care. If you want friendly social media interaction, YouTube comment section. Mine is at least pretty friendly. You know, have a good time. I don't delete any chats, even if you disagree with me, by the way. So there is some of that. There's some people that don't understand what Twitter is. And that's what you're starting to see is the tone policing. Like, oh, I'd agree with them, but their tone is like, you don't understand what Twitter is. You are making the same arguments as the effeminates were in 2020 with the mean tweets of Donald Trump. And remember in 2021, when, you know, Biden was the president, we're like, oh yeah, the economy sucks, but no more mean tweets, you know, $7 eggs, but no more mean tweets, $5 gas, but no more mean tweets, bad withdrawal from Afghanistan, but thank God for no more mean tweets. People don't have their priorities straight. And that is not a manly way of thinking, by the way. Mean tweets is not a manly way of thinking. So with that said, let's dive into the James Lindsay thing. So James Lindsay went to American Reformer, got them to publish under a pseudonym an article that he wrote that he says was spoofed off of the Marxism thing. So you wrote the article on that. How about you give the overview? I'm going to pull something up real quick.
So, yeah, I mean, part of the purpose of the article is I actually do use Grok to just like summarize, okay, how is this article compare and contrast with Marx? And, you know, that way, I could at least say, hey, a third party application did it. And it's not just me being biased. It's, you know, let AI explain how it does connect. And yeah, sure, he uses a lot of the mimicry and the structure. And Grok said it's about 60 to 70% plagiarized. I think if you actually did the word count, it was like 80 to 95% was changed.
Here's the thing. If you did not tell it to compare it to the Marx Communist Manifesto, it would not have come up because
that was part of the prompt.
So you checked it for comparison without it.
No, I checked it with including the prompt. It would have said how much of this is Marx or whatever.
So but, the word count, you did a word count.
I just asked the system to come up with the number.
So here's the, cause the other Paul did this well, cause he understands AI. He uses AI a lot. To help summarize and translate and stuff like that. So he uses AI a lot to summarize positions of certain people, I guess.
But the opening,
he says, when you tell AI to compare, the American Reformer article to the Communist Manifesto, it's going to compare them. If you say, hey, is this based on that? It's going to find a way to do that because you've introduced bias into the prompt. You've introduced the bias. If you were to say, hey, plagiarism, check this American Reformer article, it would, and this is what the other Paul said, it came back as, hey, there's no plagiarism here.
And this is why with the highlights. And now the first paragraph is one in particular I did highlight in the article because I talk about how, okay, yeah, the first sentence, yeah, that could be, a little bit of an allusion there. But again, that could be played off as innocent.
So
like referencing a famous document and this is like parody.
So this is what James Lindsay submitted. And this is from him. So this is his Twitter account that submitted this picture that we are using today. It says a rising spirit haunting America is the spirit of a true Christian right. Moreover, all existing powers of the American regime since the end of the Second World War have aligned themselves against it and its reemergence from the shadows of American civic life, politics, and religion. The Marxist left and its neo-Marxist woke descendants and the liberal establishment, the neoconservatives and their police and intelligence apparatuses. So that's the first sentence of the American Reformer article. It does read weird.
Yeah, it's very clunky. And again, that second, like the first sentence, yeah, you can say maybe he's doing a little bit of a play off Marx. That
it sounds like a speech, though.
Those second and third sentences, that's a very clunky way to insert and replace Marx. Like,
yeah, I mean,
you're trying way too hard because, again, all the powers of old Europe have entered into Holy Alliance to
exercise. I mean, let me actually.
This specter.
Okay. Yeah. A specter is haunting Europe. A specter of communism. All the powers of old Europe have entered into a Holy Alliance to exercise this specter. Pope and Tsar, Metternich and Guizot, French radicals and German police spies. And then there's another paragraph that he didn't copy. So he omits this paragraph where the party is in opposition that has not been decried as communistic by its opponents in power, where the opposition has not hurled back the branding reproach of communism against the more advanced opposition parties, as well as against its reactionary adversaries. What? Yeah, he did not get the American Reformer to publish anything remotely close to that.
Yeah, and keep in mind, he does expand certain sections, and he does condense certain sections. And that's one of the things he does. And again, his PDF version of where he goes like line by line through the article, and I guess through the Communist Manifesto checks, that becomes very evident, is that some sections were condensed, some were very much expanded. And I do go through a little of that in the article, because again, because I assume this is the very beginning of Communist Manifesto, so it's going to be more descriptive, not prescriptive. Marx is describing the environment as it is, or at least as he sees it, not necessarily what his solution or prescriptions are. And again, if you actually look at what Marx's solutions are, spoiler alert, he basically thinks it's liberalism harder, and that will eventually give way to communism, and that communism's an inevitability from liberalism, which, you know, James Lindsay's solution is actually liberalism even harder.
So one thing that I'm contemplating tweeting out is, who's actually farther left? Like, who's more left wing, Joseph Stalin or James Lindsay? So James Lindsay is a 2015 liberal. Joseph Stalin put the kibosh on a lot of sexual degeneracy, believed in architecture, and obviously did a lot of really bad things. But
I mean, he was more of a gangster than an ideologue. Like,
yeah, he wasn't as ideological as Lenin was. Who wasn't as ideological as a lot of things, but Lenin was like Lenin is like in the Gay Activist Hall of Fame. Like, he's a gay activist, one of the most prominent gay activists of the 20th century, for sure. By prominence, I would say he's number one. So let me read the last part of this comparison. So this is from the American Reformer article. There are two consequences of this unholy alliance. First, the Christian right itself is recognized by all these forces to be a power and thus a threat. Second, it is time for this arranged order to end, for a new Christian right to emerge and stake its rightful claim on 21st century American politics.
I mean, the funny thing about the first sentence is that's James Lindsay's entire shtick, is that, you know, the Christian nationalism is this big threat. They're like, he's the one that's literally saying that. So again, that's one thing I'd ask about.
I'm glad he believes it, though.
I mean, yeah. But part of the whole problem with the American Reformer article is, okay, how much does Lindsay actually just agree with? Is like, and again, I'm referring to a lot more of the descriptive passages in the article. How much of it does he just actually agree with? Like, he's perfectly fine with like humans being atomized. Or does he just deny that liberalism actually leads to atomization? Which is, I'll be honest, it's like, if you would deny that, then you're just not very intelligent, and especially in the realm of philosophy. Because I can name like a dozen philosophers that have recognized it. And they're across various schools of camp. And again, one of them would be G.K. Chesterton, who I actually do name drop in the article as someone who would have very much similarities with Marx, but his solution is clearly different.
Right, because at the end of the day, the industrial age, like that industrial revolution brought about a lot of problems that everyone wanted to solve. Like, the working conditions sucked. This created such big problems for nations that you're going to have a lot of movements that want to solve these problems.
Yeah, and I think that is very much overlooked, especially on like the American right. We kind of think, oh, Marx was like this underachiever, he was this loser, he never did anything. I think he even lived like with his mom or whatever. Which, okay, sure. Even if all of that's true, I mean, again, I don't really think he's unintelligent, just wrong. And I don't believe in underestimating our enemies, even our ideological enemies, unless they give us a reason to be like, these people are unintelligent. Which
I think James Lindsay is unintelligent, though.
I mean, you would think, is he unintelligent, Haley, or is he just malicious? Because he's supposedly a math guy, which means he is supposed to be intelligent. So is
Neil Shendi, right?
I have no clue, but so I would, but I would more say it's malice, or he's kind of being paid to spout certain talking points
by a certain person. Because he has new discourses, which is founded by Michael Fallon,
which again is entirely complicit in this deception article.
Well, and really, more it's people fake news. It's the fake news of saying I got American Reformer to publish the Communist Manifesto. So let me read the part that is the communist part. Two things result from this fact. One, communism is already acknowledged by all European powers to be in itself a power. Two, it is high time that communists should openly, in face of the whole world, publish their views, their aims, their tendencies, and meet this nursery tale of the specter of communism with a manifesto of the party itself. Again, that last part is nowhere in what he submitted to the American Reformer.
Yeah, the only thing that's the same is the two points. And the second is what? It's time for this arranged order to end and for a new Christian right to emerge. Okay.
Yeah, that's not even apples to apples.
I mean, I'm surprised he didn't do the nursery rhyme. Like, reading this right now, I'm surprised he didn't do the nursery tale.
And that's a good take. Like, you could have
done that throughout. Is he tries very hard to insert like that kind of language, like the nursery tale, because he has something about like the Philistine something that Marx used, but he uses that same line. It might be like Philistine conditions or something. So he does that throughout, or this golden calf, I think that's also an illusion, except it's free trade. And I think he replaces it with liberalism. And then it proceeds to talk about free trade, which was Marx, but.
So I don't think he did not get anything over on American Reformer, and thus they left the article up because made it James Lindsay. They gave him attribution for it because at the end of the day, he didn't do what he said he did. And that is a lie. Like, maybe submitting a article pseudonymously, I don't really care about, but then saying, hey, I tricked them into publishing the Communist Manifesto, even though I changed it substantially. And this is apparently why James Lindsay's famous, is because he did this with Mein Kampf and liberal journalists or liberal academic journals. And it's like, first of all, anything could get published in an academic journal. Second of all, you did the same level of changing the words, and you're somehow a celebrity for that, an internet celebrity for that, even though you've done like nothing meaningful. Your critiques on critical race theory suck. Your solutions on it are terrible, if not non-existent. I don't get it. There's nothing to this guy. And as Charles Haywood would say, he's low IQ. I don't care if he has a math PhD.
Haywood really addresses like what is classical liberalism, because that's one thing I'm kind of seeing from this entire debate is, oh, I'm a classical liberal. That means I believe in like limited government and, you know, free trade, or not free trade, but like, I guess they might say free trade or economic.
Free market, maybe. And national defense.
Yeah, it's like, I believe in like, you know, freedom and liberty and limited government, which like, no, limited government is not liberalism. Like that was like limited government, consent of the governed, like all of those things are more English tradition. They're not necessarily tied to liberalism. Like if it's liberalism or enlightenment, it has to be like more tied to like John Locke and Rousseau.
Another thing to point out is that warfare really determines the system of government that becomes prominent. So what do I mean by that? In ancient Greece, you had phalanx formations. So you had infantry units that were very powerful rather than knights and stuff like that. So these infantry units were very powerful. It was a very democratized fighting unit. And so the people that fought in those infantry units could demand a certain amount of political power. Obviously, this falls apart in, you know, after the fall of Rome and during the, you know, during Rome and the fall of Rome and after the fall of Rome. But once you get the emergence of and popularization of firearms and pike and shot warfare and stuff like that, Knights kind of go by the wayside. So these expensive units are by the wayside, and you can just get a bunch of people with guns. And once again, you have a very democratized fighting force. And that's pretty much why we have a return to the consent of the governed argument, because the governed are the people who do the fighting.
Well, I mean, even from like a biblical standpoint, because I've read some of that in Samuel Rutherford, and again, he's not really an Enlightenment or a classical liberal thinker. But yeah, he talks about, yeah, the consent of the governed is natural. It is biblical. The idea that the people have to consent to the king, which again, happens in the Bible. If you look at Saul being affirmed by the people, David being affirmed by the people numerous times. And then you have, so even though these people
Rehoboam not being affirmed by yes. the people.
So,
and God justified that rebellion. God acknowledged that their breaking away from Rehoboam was justified.
So, yeah, the consent of the governed is critical to the legitimacy of a ruler. So even though these people, like David and Saul, were both anointed by God for their crowns, it still required the, I guess,
it's
consent of the governed, as we would say. It's the consent of the governed was still a factor in their... in like when their reigns actually began. Like David was crowned anointed, but he was still probably a decade before he became king.
Yeah. So yeah, I think a lot of ideas like hegemony is one thing that seems to be coming up. And Karl Marx, he did not invent hegemony. He did not discover that hegemony exists. And that dominant cultures are dominant. Like, that is not a Marxist idea or criticism of culture and society. So when Christian nationalists say, hey, the pagans are in charge and this has negative consequences for all of society, that's not a Marxist critique, because that's just basic hegemony.
Well, that's why, like, you can literally, like, go through a lot of the American Reformer article. A lot of it doesn't really make sense, because it's again, this is why it's just like, why did they pass this through? Because it's using a lot of fanciful diction. It's got a long word count for an article. So you're almost wondering, why did they just let this through?
I mean, and American Reformers, a lot of the sentences, for long word counts.
A lot of the sentences and the, I guess, the structure, it's very foreign to even like Christian nationalism rhetoric or dialogue, because it's using a lot of different terms. So that's one thing I did notice. I don't know if you wanted to actually pull up the article and just take a couple lines from it, but.
Your article?
Either that or the original American Reformer article.
I don't have that linked pulled. Because basically I wanted to talk about the use of James Lindsay. So this was James Lindsay's efforts were forwarded by a lot of people, right? A lot of people who are definitely moderates, in the term that I used the word moderate earlier, and definitely a lot of liberals, they ran with this story. Babylon Bee was probably the biggest promoters of this within the Christian sphere. Seth Dillon and Joel Berry, who I would probably consider both liberals. So they both ran hard with this.
Yeah.
And they knew it was fake news. Samuel Say, medieval guy, who, you know, I think is a bit of someone who is not in the position that he's in because of merit. And he's not an American, which is worth pointing out, because so many people that don't understand American politics, you know, because they're not Americans, really try to interject themselves. You got Douglas Murray is a big name in that sphere. Joe Boot, I think, is comparable to that as well. And definitely Samuel Say as well. And he also likes Taylor Swift, which, yeah, it's pretty gay. But nevertheless, Neil Shenby was big on it. Neil Shenby is one of the biggest defenders of wokeness in the church, because he runs cover for the people that are woke, like J.D. Greer. He defends J.D. Greer. And if woke people like Ligon and Duncan are endorsing your book, it does not actually criticize. It is not a valid critique of critical race theory. The guy endorsed or wrote the foreword to Eric Mason's Woke Church and is also endorsing your book, Neil Shenby. It's not a critique. it's not a meaningful critique of critical race theory or wokeness or social justice or anything like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of bad. And if you endorse Resolution 9, you were woke. So there's a lot of that. A lot of people like that ran with this. So I guess you have any thoughts on the aftermath? Because that's kind of what you didn't touch in your article, was the aftermath of the story.
Well, and keep in mind, like, they're trying to be like, oh, all these people, they're actually agreeing with Marx. Well, I mean, yeah, a lot of it is very, a lot of what is in the article is very descriptive. Like, let me just read one of the Lindsay excerpts that I actually quote in my article is, you know, as with industry, so with intellectual activity, the intellectual creations of their individuals and their nations become under, and this is the insertion, liberalism and an international sludge of toxic and vacant academic right think. Everything becomes stupid, woke, historical, independent, and communal thought, and especially religious belief become more and more impossible. And from the numerous pieces of authentic human art and literature that once inspired men and set fire in their souls, there arises this globally homogenous world literature that fails to inspire at all. Now, a lot of that was inserted from Lindsay in place of Marx, but instead of liberalism, Marx uses the term common property.
Public land?
So common property is a noun that refers to tangible items. And again, Lindsay basically throughout his article replaces people and tangible things with ideas, which is, again, a very liberal impulse. And that's how he's able to maintain a lot of Marx's like framework, is by replacing people with ideas.
And so instead of saying the bourgeoisie, he's saying the liberals.
And the bourgeoisie is a class of people.
Right.
And he's replacing a class of people with an idea, an abstract idea or abstract set of ideals. And like, but even in the quote I read, okay, is that not really like kind of true? Is like American culture at large not becoming like the world culture?
Makes you woke.
Yeah. Is hip hop music not the same in any country in the world, regardless of what language it's in? And that's like really the only distinctive feature is like, you know, French hip hop is going to sound a little bit different than English hip hop and sound a little bit different than Brazilian. Like they all sound the same. Like music sounds the same these days. And that's the homogenization of culture that, you know, and again, Marx is not the only one pointing it out, but it is a real thing. But the fact that, like, and one world literature is a concept for Marx.
And now, is that something that he invents or something that he criticizes?
Marx is
it prescriptive or descriptive from him?
I mean, it's weird because it's certainly descriptive in the original text, but it is one of them things where, okay, yeah, but what Marx is talking about is still kind of true. Like, you know, even if you look at like movies in the last 10 years, we might call it the Marvelification of cinema, where everything becomes the MCU or a clone of the MCU.
Oh man.
And that's liberalism. That's this homogenization of culture, which again, you know,
man, that is way more true.
But there was a guy that wrote a book earlier this year that talked about the the total state, which talks about how everything becomes the same. That's a managerial instinct.
You see, but he's the biggest thought leader in the woke right, I'm told.
Yeah, the biggest thought leader. But the idea that all, like, because you have to, because, like, you know, the total state has to scale upwards and be, you know, as like a beast or like a bacterial infection, it has to keep growing. In order to keep growing, it needs more consumers. But if you have more consumers from different nations, different backgrounds, et cetera, well, you got to make all the consumers the same so that you can keep growing at scale. Because as soon as you get to a point where your consumers are not all homogenous, then, you know, that's when there's a breakdown. And again, you can look across industries where a lot of cars are kind of the same. It's just, you know, one's a Honda, one's a Toyota, one's a Ford, Chevy, you know, Chrysler and all that stuff. So a lot of vehicles are basically the same. It's just you have different brands
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, I think the most distinct are Ford and Ram as far as pickup trucks go, but everyone else seems to be either, maybe Chevy's a little bit more distinct, but everyone else, like Toyota, is definitely going for a Ford look. And so everyone else is trying to look like one of them.
Yeah, like even the paint colors are pretty much the same across the board. So like this is the homogenization that is a real thing. And that it's like, does James Lindsay just deny that this is real? And again, you don't have to be Karl Marx. You're not saying I agree with and affirm Marx. You're just saying Marx actually was able to identify something that was tangibly true. And again, he's not the only one.
And right. I mean, how many observations of Marx are unique to Marx? And I think
probably not. And again, I asked AI to actually give me a list of philosophers. And again, one of them was G.K. Chesterton.
So I want to pivot as we're kind of getting ready to wrap up. Why are they using James Lindsay? Like, why are the liberals and the moderates in this fight? Why are they pivoting to James Lindsay? And I think this is where Woke Wars 2 is the same as Woke Wars 1. Why did they bring James Lindsay into church in the first place? Because liberals will always side with new atheists before they side with the right. So the liberals, meaning people like Owen Strand, people, you know, a lot of those classical liberals, the people that want to maintain classical liberalism, they will always side with someone like a James Lindsay over someone like a John Harris. John Harris should have a way bigger platform for all the work that he did fighting wokeness. He should have a way bigger platform.
Yeah, I mean, social justice goes to church, but yeah, because he's too far right, you know, that's why he gets snubbed exactly. In favor of the James Lindsays of the
group. Exactly. Because those people view people on the right as a liability. So people like that, they would rather partner with an atheist outside of the church who hates them, who just wants their money, who does not have adequate critiques, who does not have any solutions. They would rather partner with someone like that than someone who's in the church, will name names, actually opposes wokeness, actually has solutions. They're not interested.
And keep in mind, I mean, James Lindsay is basically just a contrarian. And again,
he doesn't have his own
philosophy other than like classical liberalism, even harder, which again is what Marx thought. But you know, when he literally has a whole paragraph about, you know, all these, you know, like people are artificially changed by under the consensus in place of the old ones, satisfied people and nations themselves. Liberalism led to people to find new ones, requiring for their satisfaction products of cheap foreign manufacturing, nourishing international dependence. Like, that's literally about, like, is that not true? Was Marx, and again, it's even more true now.
So Marx is talking about
globalization, global supply chains,
dumping goods and killing industries. Yes.
Well, killing like self-sufficient communities, which again is true. That's an economic
concept that predates Marx, though.
Yeah,
the idea of dumping.
But that did happen. It's called dumping. Well, it's not just that. It's basically you need this spice that comes from somewhere else in the world. So, you know, the people that make, I guess, the local stuff run out of business. But like, you know, cheap foreign manufacturing, like, yeah, entire swaths of America got basically run out of their jobs because of cheap foreign manufacturing. And then they're sold those same products at the local store, like the Walmart or whatever, that their community used to make. And again, that's just a reality of what industrialization did. Like, you're not woke for calling that out or saying, like, you know, Marx is saying, you know, supply chains and globalization eliminated a lot of self-sufficient communities. And, you know, paleocons and Christian nationalists have long been saying globalism is bad. Outsourcing is bad. And then James Lindsay is basically saying, see, woke right.
Yeah, the irony is that, you know, people like Lenin and Stalin were internationalist.
Yes. And ironically, Lindsay's article, like, it talks about the natural superiors or something like that, which is, that's certainly contrary to Marx, who basically wanted a classless society. Like, Christian nationalism affirms
hierarchy.
It affirms the existence of class. And again, if you really want to go deep into like political theory, like aristocracy is like the last line of defense against tyranny. And that's one of the differences between America and England at the founding, is that aristocracy was kind of like a check and balance against the government. And now Britain is doing away with aristocracy even more than they already have. And you wonder why Britain is going downhill so bad. It's because they've done away with their aristocracy. They have like a marginal level of the crown, but even all the lords and the noblemen, the actual nobility, that's all
right
too. But America used to have that until this, event called the Civil War eliminated all that. Because the South, and again, watch the 1607 Project with, John Harris did. It talks about this Southern aristocracy, Washington family, the Monroe, the Jeffersons. Like the Washington family can be traced back to the 13th century. That's how established their lineage is.
Wow. That's a really good project that he did. And again, what happens when you actually want to advance right-wing ideas? The liberals will side with the atheist to suppress you. And we will see that playbook run a lot in Woke Wars 2, because we saw that in Woke Wars 1. Because so many people didn't want to say, hey, these people just hate white people.
That's literally point out
that wokeness was really about hating white people.
That's really the only thing that binds the leftist coalition, is like feminism and anti-white policies.
Anti-Christian overall.
Yeah.
That's the only coherence to the worldview, is it opposed to white people, Christians, families, and men. That's basically it. That, if it's bad for any of those four groups, the Democrat Party will support it. So, I'll take some chat now. I don't know if I have anything more to add.
Address this. I think Germany is a lot easier time of recovering than the UK at this point. I mean, if you look at what the Tories nominated to be their leader, not a British person, versus the AfD party in Germany, actually does represent a tangible threat. I mean, there's a famous guy on, the DR, a T777, who would say that Germany must be liberated in order for the rest of Europe to be liberated. And he actually thinks Merkel did a good job of at least decentralizing some of the German government to allow a little bit more local autonomy. And that, I guess, has given way to a party like AfD.
So you're saying, he says that comment was that Germany's decline is worse than the UK.
Worse than like a lower low, but at the same time, they're probably more likely to recover quicker than England at this point.
So you're not, now there is something going on in England that I would recommend is looking into the Homeland Party. So they seem like, because the Reform UK party, which is Nigel Farage, is completely sold out. I mean, Nigel Farage is promoting Muslim immigration at this point and appeasing Muslims and stuff like that.
And which is like, just Starmer is coming out hardcore anti-immigrant, at least on paper, or at least in his rhetoric.
Who's Starmer?
The PM, Prime Minister of Labour.
Of Labour?
Yeah, he's the Prime Minister. He's like this super, super unpopular, but he's coming out hardcore against immigration.
Because, it's that unpopular is an issue, but the people that get elected to represent opposition to mass immigration don't actually do anything to accomplish that. So, I'll join you in being more optimistic about Germany than the UK at the moment. Supposedly, Canada might wake up one of these years. I hear good things about Trudeau's come to an end. I hear that the Conservative Party in Canada, which I think I read in my book as a left-wing party, they've maybe reformed themselves this year.
No, I mean, it's probably like, who knows, because I mean, the Tories in the UK ran on anti-immigration for like 10 years and made things worse.
So Yellowmont says, Ray, Wendell's law is still holds. Christian pastors will only stand up to something if a woman does it first. So there's two parts to Wendell's law. One is that part, and the other is that a woman in a prominent position will always skew liberal more as the years go on, which I think there will be some exceptions to. Like, you know, I know for a while I thought Ali Stuckey was going to go a little bit left, but does not appear to have been the sustained course, in my opinion. So that's been averted for now. But I think you could see some exceptions to that. But getting Christian women to be prominent, very difficult, not natural in a lot of ways. But we'll see. But the first part, yeah, the first part of the law, Christian pastors will only stand up if a woman does it first. And yeah, that's, I wasn't sure if it was about Christian pastors, about women standing up for something, but yeah, because I'm a little lost in the law itself. But yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Christians.
But again, that's also just how Con Inc. is structured. So it's, I don't know if it starts in the church or it just seeps over into the church, but it is part of like this, like maybe it's part of managerialism, like having all this like HR culture that's just everywhere, even where it shouldn't.
What is the commenter says, what's the deal with modern cars? Did I miss something, or are you on another stream too? No, Anthony made a comment about modern cars.
Yeah, modern cars reflecting a lot of homogenization in culture. Though it also could reflect the whole outsourcing of jobs, and then you're buying that same car that was manufactured like in your town at one point, except you're buying it from a dealership. That same car was made in Mexico. And like, you know, free market liberalism would say, you know, that's awesome, even though cars cost way more than they did then. So
let's see. Actually, I want to comment on this one. The theory of behind copyright law was to keep literature from stagnating. Now there is a monopoly on copyright, and entertainment is stagnating.
Now, again,
that's true, but I don't think the cause is right. So, because you know what drives people nuts is, or what should drive people nuts is a movie like Wicked, which is fan fiction, which is absolutely stagnant literature. Because you're making fan fiction of someone else's work. And that's because the copyrights expired on it.
Just and again, that's an example of something like Marx would say, you know, this one world literature of literature in decline. And like, again, he would probably attribute it to something like copyright or even like the bourgeoisie controlling art, and thinks that the classless society would allow like more, I guess, freedom and creativity in literature, which I don't think is certainly not provable, but I just think as you have managerialism, a lot of literature might stagnate because, again, you have that HR culture in literature. Publishing houses are very like woke and liberal. So, and then of course, again, look at the last 10 years of cinema. It's just like, wow, everything's the same. Like a lot of just monotony in the, that's why a movie like Joker can break a billion. When everything else is just Marvel cinematic crap.
Yeah, I was not a big MCU person, like, ever. Because so many of their movies were just average.
And literally or repetitive. Disappointing. Repetitive template movies. I mean, the fact
or is origin stories. I don't like origin story movies.
I mean, the first
two. Like, Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, that's a good origin story movie. Batman Begins is pretty good, but I'm always going to prefer like the next movie, like Dark Knight is going to be better than Batman Begins every single time because it's not an origin story. We don't have to do the origin story. So Captain America, First Avenger sucks. But Winter Soldier is a much better movie because it's not an origin story.
And so, yeah, I mean, last 10 years proves that like
Ant-Man is terrible.
Copyright law doesn't protect literature or protect or improve creativity. But again,
it doesn't. If you take away copyright, you're going to get even worse results.
Yeah.
It might be the only thing holding back more Wickeds from appearing. Because, again, that is a creatively bankrupt story just on its premise.
Yeah.
You get, serious question from Romans 8 Shaman. What's going on? How do you avoid burning bridges when the actions of JB, Tobias, Doug Wilson, James White, and their allies are irredeemably and tangibly damaging?
I mean, I guess that's why it's embargo the bridge, don't burn it. But I mean, yeah, for me, I just don't, I don't subscribe to any of them. And at some point I probably was subscribed to at least James White, and probably maybe not Doug Wilson, but I might have been subscribed to like Cross Politic or maybe even Cannon. So it's just, I'm just going to, you know, unsubscribe, unfollow, and just not do business with any of them. Even though, you know, ironically, if I wanted to do business with Cannon, it would be like to buy some Stephen Wolf merch, but nope, not going to do it.
I might, but I'll definitely get the Stephen Wolf stupid version of, you know, for the stupid people. I'll get his book for that, The Very Short Case for Christian Nationalism, which is his next book. I'll definitely get that book, though. So how do we avoid burning bridges? So there is more about maybe the relationship between, say, myself and these four or five names that you bring up. Yeah, maybe that is never going to be repaired. But there's enough of their followers that I don't want to burn the bridges so much that people can't cross the bridge from one side to the other. So that's something to be clear, is you don't want to, I don't want to alienate people unnecessarily, because I want to go, you know, Doug Wilson's been wrong about a lot of things lately, but I don't want to say, hey, because you like Doug Wilson, you can't listen to me. I want to make sure that doesn't happen. And obviously the other way as well, like just because they're someone who's a follower of Doug Wilson doesn't mean I can't listen to them either. So there's something, there's some sort of rapport that needs to be maintained. Even if the trust between, you know, James White, okay. Which is odd because in the past 2 months, or maybe it's 3 months, I've defended James White from being called a heretic, by the way. I did a video on that. Because the Steve Dace Show co-host was calling him a heretic.
Yeah, I mean, it's really.
So I've defended James White. I've defended Doug Wilson. And for them to just, you know, stab us in the back like that.
And keep in mind, it's not like Doug Wilson doesn't have, I'll say, a checkered history. Because he had the slavery book, as it's, you know, slavery in the South, or as it was in the South or whatever. It's just like, dude, you got to be a lot more gracious to people when that's in your Wikipedia section. Like when that's in your Wikipedia, like life history, not early life history, but like when you have that in your past, you ought to be a lot more gracious considering all these people stuck with you through that. Even though I'm not even accusing it of being wrong. I'm just saying, hey,
that was hot.
Yeah. That was some spice. You had some ghost peppers.
So yeah, there's gotta be an effort, and I'm working out how to not burn the bridges. So I'm trying to work that out. Like, I'm trying to say, hey, you know, maybe I'll call Samuel, say this, but, you know, I'll make peace with the people that, you know, and, you know, I'm going to trash Owen Strand, but maybe Jamie Bambrick, you know, we're going to have a discussion and a dialogue. You know, Tom Buck yesterday, I had a little calm interaction with him and stuff like that.
I wish you answered my question. How the absurdist poll actually advances patriarchy. I wish he would have done that. But
so, let me pull this one up.
Sorry, so industrialization didn't necessarily do that. Corporations deciding to cut costs, even if it meant lower quality, did. So part of what industrialization did is it deracinated man from his work. So if you go back to feudalism, like the lord of the manor had to take care of his people. Like even in the South, the masters still took care of their slaves. So they had social obligations to people. And this isn't something Marx is unique in pointing out. Like everyone pointed this out. Bertrand Juvenal points it out in On Power. But people had obligations to those underneath them. Industrialization basically meant the employer has zero obligations to his employees. You're just a number on a spreadsheet. And that's still kind of true today. So I'm not quite sure what the question in this was, but you know,
industrialization didn't create this issue that you're describing. It was the corporations being cheap that did, is what the point is saying.
Oh, well,
okay.
So yeah, I mean, so again, the issues that in Marx's day were very, I guess, difficult because you had a lot of transformation. It's called the Industrial Revolution for a reason. So we got to understand that, you know, one, there's going to be natural growing pains to especially a technological surge. And two, a lot of things are going to come out of this to react to the problems that exist. And we shouldn't bury our heads in the sand that these problems did not exist.
So I actually want to make that a broader point about Christian nationalism. I think there's going to be some things in the beginning that are going to be sorted out, but a lot of successful movements have these types of issues that they have early power struggles going in, but you're going to have someone be a successful figure that overcomes these power struggles. And I think that's oftentimes what we see in politics. You can look at history, like Genghis Khan was a loser until he's like 40 years old when he started winning. I don't think it's true that he consummated half of the, you know, that's not genetically true, by the way.
Yeah, like, I just assume that there's like Mongolian DNA and people said, hey, I'm related to this. Khan.
Like, that's not actually true, but
okay, then
anyway,
Sally Hemings are related.
Jeff has a question. We're already past last call, by the way, for questions. I didn't put the thing up. Why do you think Wilson is solid on the CSA slavery, but seems to be less tolerant of other spicy dudes? Is he just older? Yes, but I would say people don't like people to their right. You see this in conservative ink all the time. Like, is Steven Crowder going to have someone on a show that's more conservative than him? Generally not when I ever watched did he do that, and that kind of became annoying at a time. Like, everyone that you're talking to is like edgy liberal.
Yeah.
Okay, how about someone that's far right, you know, entertaining? Yeah, there's entertainment value with people and like that. But
maybe part of it is like he's older now, so he's not interested in picking as many fights, but also, you know, certain
questions. I think he's very interested in picking fights.
I should say, like, going places like the slavery CSA question.
Oh, okay. You're saying he's not as interested in pushing boundaries.
Yes, as he would have, like, in his younger years. But at the same time, I mean, you know, a certain question is a little bit more spicy than the slavery topic. And that's, like, that's the line in the sand for Doug. He'll probably do anything but, you know, cross the question mark.
Let's see. There are two sides. This is a question. There are two sides. Should women obey their husbands? Yes, but a wise husband listens to their wife's advice before pushing forward. Yeah, there's a big thing about the dress and the red dress. If the husband commands a wife to wear a red dress, should she submit? And it's like, I don't know the biblical case against that. It's not prudent. It might not be prudent. Maybe it is prudent.
Again, I would say the only caveat from the Bible is that, okay, the husband has to provide the dress. But otherwise, I don't see the actual biblical case against it because it's not objectively sinful as long as it's not promoting immodesty. And, you know, so it is a tangible good, so to speak.
So, and this is the question, like, why do right-wingers always seem to attack people to their right? Because me and no further, I guess they want to be the edge of the Overton window because that gives them more credibility if they're the most far right. And they maybe it's like a Hegelian dialect thing where they want to be the synthesis that emerges because this side and that side are both, you know, I don't know if it's a Hegelian thing.
This is a loser.
It's a turf thing.
It's a loser strategy.
Honestly. It is a loser strategy.
Because you know what winners don't do? They don't care about the other guy to their right or to their left. They're interested in winning.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, they look at the scoreboard, not, you know, whether they're out competing, you know, the other team or not the other team, but the other players on their own team or what the other game over there is doing. They're looking at their scoreboard and saying, hey, we need to put points on the board. They're in the end zone, not like at the concession.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Doug Wilson's Moscow, Idaho, Apologia, to me, these are small. This is a small world. It really is. You know, growing up, I knew who David Platt was. I knew who Billy Graham was. Maybe I knew who Franklin Graham was. I didn't know who Doug Wilson was. I didn't know who John MacArthur was growing up. I didn't know who James White was growing up.
I mean,
I didn't follow celebrity Christianity growing up. There's a lot of Christians that aren't in this world. Moscow, Idaho is a small town. It is a small world.
It's like a small college town.
So, but, and I'm not saying that to denigrate them, but there's a lack of understanding of the big picture here that we need to be shooting a little bit bigger than just being the next Doug Wilson.
Well, and
are you really calling it 30,000? It has 30,000 people. That's still by definition a small town, right?
Well, might be a big city in Idaho.
maybe not. Maybe in Idaho. Yeah. But we got to think bigger. Well, it is a bigger world out there. We want to reach more people than just that.
I talk about, and this is in the abortion article I wrote, is how does the pro-life movement turn things around? And again, instead of like purity spiraling and starting fights with other Christian ministries and going to war against Joel Webin, like the cultural climate is vastly improving in 2024. There is a vibe shift that is happening. It is tangible. It is real. And Moscow basically denigrated white boy summer. Like white boy summer is like your outreach. That's like your recruitment advertisement. You know, if you like brand yourself or even do like a marketing scheme that appeals to white boy summer, you're getting a lot more, let's say, libertine kind of guys that, you know, they might be more right wing coded, but they might not be Christian and saved. They might think, oh, the church is effeminate and gay or whatever. But those guys that's a right mission field. And yeah, they spent their entire year going after Joel Webin and like fighting their turf war for, you know, their like small camp of the internet.
After they watched G3 do the same thing last year.
But
they watched G3 do this and it didn't work out for them.
But the climate is,
let's do it.
But the climate is vastly improved when you're looking at men like exploring religiosity, the gender gap, or like a lot of the political divisions by gender. You can at least get a lot of men back into church, back into the pews. And instead, they just spent a lot of their time infighting. And again, I look at it as, you know, Trump was able to effectively market and reach to men. And a lot of these like guys are just not willing to do that. Trump didn't bash white boy summer as gay. He took the memes and made them national. Like he basically said they're eating the cats and dogs on a debate stage because of white boy summer.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like the world is so much bigger than Moscow, Idaho, and G3 Ministries destroyed their credibility online. And I think the Moscow mood destroyed its credibility as well. And the debate in my head, and I might write an article on this, is who did worse damage to their brand? G3 Ministries, they at least have a pretty non-online audience that they can still market to. Is that the same with Doug Wilson? I don't think it is. I could be wrong, but I don't think his ministry at Blog and Mayblog is as non-terminally online as G3's ministry is, who wouldn't know anything that's going on. They don't know that their dude is getting dunked on. They don't know about all the criticism that G3 has gone under for, you know, putting up with Steve Lawson and stuff like that. So anyway, I think I'll just end it there.
Don't black pill. A lot of reasons to white pill. And
yeah,
the church should be looking at a lot of the cultural climate and thinking, wow, these are some nice tailwinds. You know, this is a promised land. Let's go and take it. Instead, you have Doug Wilson acting like the 10 spies that are saying, no, there's giants in here.
We need to have this Antioch Declaration so that Pete Hegseth can get accepted in the Senate, which is looking in jeopardy, not because of anything to do with us or him, because he has his own baggage, first of all. And I hear he's repented of that, and I'm not here to punch him while he's down or kick him in the nuts or anything. But I am just going to acknowledge his baggage is going to affect his ability to be Sec.Def. So, and some people just need to think bigger, I guess. It's a bigger world than Moscow, Idaho, and it's not worth alienating yourself and burning more bridges than is necessary. I'm just going to shoot bigger and aim for, you know, reaching more people. We're going to get more people discerning, and stuff like that. And if some of those people like Moscow, Idaho, sure. But if some of those people are more charismatic, you know, what they need the sermon in charismatic world, they do. So that's just my thought on that. So, I mean, that's all I got to say. Check out the book, Winning Out and Winsome. Subscribe to our newsletter. That's completely free. And the offer stands for the, I'm going to do an announcement on the offer to, if you sign up for the audio, if you sign up for the lowest tier, we're giving away the ebook of Winning Not Winsome. So, you have anything to add?
No. I could go off on another tangent, but you know, white pill, a lot of good things happening in the world, you know.
Yeah, we beat the Antioch Declaration.
But even in the culture, like the broader senses, we should be focused more on the world, not on internet turf wars.
Yes.
And you know, there's a ripe field out there if we would actually like appeal to it and not say, hey, you're in sin for questioning, you're a nabal,
and I want to put a finer point because someone might misinterpret what I'm saying to say that I'm clout chasing or anything like that. Because I have a more entrepreneurial mind. So they are thinking about market share, which is how much of a slice of the pie do they have? They're thinking about market share. I'm thinking about market size. Can we make this a bigger market? And if it's a bigger market, sure, our market share might go down, but our market size goes up. All of our market sizes go up if the market is bigger. If the market is bigger, all of our audiences grow. A rising tide lifts all boats. So that's my mentality, is like, we need to recognize that, hey, if we increase the size of our market, meaning do more evangelism, expose people, get people discerning. Like I do news commentary and gathering. So I'm just someone who writes articles on stories that are going on and, you know, and stuff like that. Obviously we're going to apply a Christian worldview. Like, you know, I'm going after things like Christianity Today. So I'm raising issues in the church or raising questions and stuff like that. But if we're all focused on, rather than as a business standpoint, increasing market share rather than increasing market size, we're going to do better. We got to stop the turf wars and stuff like that. So I'll end on that note. Have a blessed night. Stay based. Christ is King. And we'll catch you on the next one.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.